Okay, I think we're ready. All right, last time we had a biography, we talked about a man by the name of Brother Andrew, and we talked about how he used to smuggle Bibles behind the iron of all those communist countries in Eastern Europe. And we sort of ended where communism had fallen and a lot of those countries had opened up. And he started this ministry called Open Doors. But of course, the ministry would have to change significantly because a lot of the countries that he had visited previously were now very much open and it was very different. And so Brother Andrew actually turned his attention to the Islamic world, where exactly the same issues were happening all over again. You know, the government was persecuting Christians, Bibles were hard to find, pastors and leaders were feeling very isolated, and a lot of Christians were very much marginalized. They were often the poorer part of the society and so on. So his work changed and he started to really go out into the Middle Eastern countries, countries in Northern Africa, where definitely Christians were being persecuted significantly. So our story today is going to be very, very different. It's actually not about one person, but about a number of very ordinary people who have come to know the Lord. This is a very modern story, so it's very current, and for that reason I have no photos of these people because their identities still have to be hidden. Their names have been changed, etc. So we don't exactly know who they are, but we certainly know their stories. So our story begins in Libya. Well, actually we start with Libya. I need to tell you a few things about this country. So in Northern Africa, Libya is a majority Muslim country. We know that there are about 96% of the population is Muslim. Actually, it has a Christian heritage. There's really some very, very old churches, a lot of Orthodox churches. Because of its proximity to Egypt, there's a lot of Coptic Orthodox people living in Libya. But the majority of the Christians there are immigrants. So it's for them, it's a cultural thing. And for many of them, they've been Christians for generations. It's actually a free country in Libya to some extent, really. It's perhaps free in inverted commas. And they say they have freedom of religion, but actually it's just freedom for Christians to become Muslims. There is no freedom for Muslims to become Christians. In fact, that is illegal. It is illegal to baptize a Muslim who has decided to convert. And people cannot marry as well. You can't marry a Muslim, can't marry a Christian, and vice versa. Now, this is a problem because they all have identity cards in Libya, and your identity card has your religion. Now, if your parents are Muslim, then you're automatically Muslim. And if you convert to Christianity, there is no way you can change your card. And because of what's written on your card, that will determine who you can marry. So even if you're a Christian who's converted later in life, it's very hard for you because you're not allowed to marry another Christian. So things like that make life very difficult for the Christians in Libya. Now, our story actually starts with a man by the name of Boutros. Now, Boutros lived in Libya, born there, raised there, but he studied in England. And he spent a lot of his younger years in England, and then he went to university and so on. But he became a Christian when he was in England. And not only that, but he wanted to know more. And he ended up going to Bible college and so on. Now, he was married and he just finished Bible college or theological college or whatever it is. And he had this big decision to make. Should he stay in England or should he go back home to Libya? And the thing was, he was thinking in his mind, you know, I would be quite useful here in England. You know, there's a lot of things I can do. There's a lot of immigrant communities. My Arabic could be useful. But deep down, he knew that the Lord wanted him to go back home to Libya. But he just fought it. The idea of going back to Libya with being a Christian, it just seemed too hard. Now, at this time, he actually knew Brother Andrew. And Brother Andrew also had this feeling that Boutros should go back. He should go back to Libya and work there amongst the Christians. But Boutros was really kind of finding every excuse to stay in England. Life would be better there. It's better for the family. It's too hard in Libya. A pastor's life in Libya was awful. You were so poor. You were marginalized. It was too difficult. But on one occasion, Brother Andrew met with Boutros, and together, you know, they talked a little bit about, you know, what it is to, you know, what Brother Andrew learnt in those early days. And one of the things Brother Andrew talked about was a verse that had really challenged him. And this was the verse that he was given way back when he started. And it was the verse in Revelation 3, "Strengthen what remains and is about to die." And Boutros really did feel in his heart of hearts that his calling was back to Libya, where the church was really, really struggling, where pastors had no support and Christians were often leaving the country in droves. And he really felt he needed to go back. Now, what clinched it for him was when he came off the London Underground one day and he was just walking in the street and he heard someone speaking to him in Arabic. And this man said, "Oh, brother, brother, come. You must come to Friday prayers tonight. Come, you know, I know where you're from, and you and I, we're from the same country." And the accent and the Arabic, they talked for a while. And then Boutros said, I'm sorry, brother, but I am a Christian. I'm not a Muslim." And this man was so just the disgust and the anger on his face, and he just didn't want to talk to him anymore. And he then handed out his leaflets to everybody else passing by. And Boutros realized that there were all these Muslim missionaries who had come to England to spread the news of Islam. And what was he doing? And he realized that he really needed to go back, and he must go back to support those Christian leaders in Libya, where the church was so, so very weak. And when he talked to Andrew, Andrew mentioned something he too had learnt, and he said, "Don't worry about the fact that it's 96% Muslim in Libya. Remember, one man with God is always a majority." So the first thing Boutros did when he and his wife moved over to Libya was he tried to meet with all these different Christian leaders. And he really didn't care about denominations. In a country where there are so many denominations but so few Christians, really these barriers, you just don't need them. So one of the first places he went to was a really old church called St. Mark's, and it was in a small village. And this church was thousands of years old. It was sort of heritage kind of thing. And he met with this priest there by the name of Abuna Alexander. And Abuna Alexander had been a faithful priest in this place for decades. And no one had ever sort of wanted to meet him to sort of say, "How are you going? What's it like?" and anything. So he was very surprised when he had this call from this Christian man who wanted to meet him. And he was also very surprised because Boutros was not Orthodox, and yet he wanted to meet. But they ended up talking for a long time, and Abuna Alexander was so weary. And he said, "You know, it's so hard here. Look at this place." And he took Boutros through the church hall and the grounds. He said, "Everything's falling apart. We have holes in the ceiling. Our toilets are blocked. We've got this wall is completely cracked. And look outside. It's been vandalized and we cannot get it fixed." And he said, "The government is wearing us down. You see, to get a church fixed, you have to apply for permits and all sorts of things. And they never approve them. And so that what their plan is they're just hoping that all the churches will crumble into a heap. And then they'll clear it away and build a mosque. That's their plan." And Abuna was very, very, I guess, resentful and worn down by this. And then Boutros said, "Well, what about your people?" "Ah," he said, "I have about 50, maybe 40, 40 to 50 people that come. Some of them are just coming on Easter and Christmas. Many are scared. A lot have left. Many families have left to go and live in Europe now. Being a Christian is too hard here. And some that do come who have no choice because they have to stay, well, many of them come because they're culturally Christian. I haven't seen much life in this place." So Boutros said to the old man, he said, "I can't help you at all with your building, but maybe we can work together to repair the hearts of your congregation." One evening, Ahmed rode his motorbike from his home and he parked two blocks away from St. Mark's Church, where Abuna Alexander was priest. He then slipped into the shadows and he walked, trying to walk casually, but you could tell because he was always looking behind him that he wasn't at all being very casual. And he came, after weaving through alleyways, to the door of the priest's flat, which was behind the church. And he knocked on the door. Abuna Alexander opened the door and saw with shock this young man with a bruised, bleeding face. And he checked the street and pulled him inside. And once he'd sat him down and patched up all the wounds and so on and gave him some food to eat, he said, "What's your story?" Well, Ahmed told him. You see, Ahmed had a school friend by the name of Zaki. And Zaki had done high school in England. And there in England, somebody had given him a Bible. And Zaki had read parts of the Bible and started to ask some very dangerous questions about Islam. And he would text Ahmed and say, "You know, think about this. What about that? And you really should read this New Testament. That prophet Jesus, he's different." At that very time, Ahmed was having these strange dreams. He was having these dreams of hell. And he was so fearful because he thought, if I'm not a faithful Muslim, I'm going to be there. And these dreams would terrorize him night after night, and he would wake up screaming. And he thought, maybe I do need to know more. Maybe I can just learn a little bit about this Jesus. By the way, he's a prophet in the Quran anyway. And so he got his hand on the New Testament and he started to read. And as he read the New Testament, this person of Jesus came to him so strongly, he couldn't believe it. This was not a prophet like Muhammad. But he thought he needed to get more deeper into Islam. And so on one occasion, there was a special meeting at the mosque. After prayers, all the uni students could gather and the imam, the sort of the leader, would explain a few things from the Quran, and then it was open forum for questions. And so Ahmed decided to go along. He thought he needed to know more about Islam. Maybe he needed to be a more faithful Muslim. And so he went along, and when the forum was open and he could ask questions, he raised his hand and he stood up and he said to the imam, "Why is it that we, the religion that honors all the prophets, ignores the greatest prophet of all, Jesus? You see, is there anyone greater than Jesus? Because when I look at him, I see the face of God." And in that question, Ahmed didn't even know what he'd said. He spoke from his heart. And before he realized, the imam's face crumpled into anger. He slammed his fist down. He shouted, and Ahmed's friends, grabbed him. They dragged him out of the mosque. They beat him up. They kicked him. The imam rang his father, Ahmed's father, and said, "You get your son to say the Shahada, which is the faithful sort of a declaration that Muslims can say. You get him to say it three times with his hand on the Quran, and you beat him until he says that." And Ahmed didn't even realize what he'd done. He'd asked one question. And his friends dragged him home, and when he got home, his father was so angry, and they made him, they said, "You must say this, you must say this. Put your hand on the Quran, declare that you are a faithful Muslim." And they beat him and they beat him until his younger sister was screaming and saying, "Just do it, put your hand, just say the words." But in this strong reaction, Ahmed suddenly realized, this is the truth. This is it. I've found it. And the anger and the screaming of his family made him all the more sure that he had stumbled on the real truth. Soon his cousins came over, the word spread, and his cousins declared that they would be straight to paradise if they killed him. And if he ever came back to the house or anywhere around the house, they would get him, they would kill him, and God would honor them for their killing. And so Ahmed, well, he was, he knew that he had to get out, and he had to get out very quickly. And so he decided to run. He grabbed the clothes on his back. He jumped on his motorbike. And he didn't know where to go. He had no idea. Like, where would be safe? And then he thought, a church would be safe. you know, maybe a Christian, and the only place he could think of was the St. Mark's Church, and there he was with Abuna Alexander. And so Abuna was pacing the floor thinking, he can't stay here. You know, the idea that his cousins had threatened to kill him, that wasn't an empty threat. These things happened. And you see, the police would just sort of drop the investigation or something like that. You know, they would just overlook these murders, these honour killings. And so Abuna thought, he cannot even stay in this town. It's too small. We have to, somehow we've got to work out a way of getting him to somewhere safe. And he was pacing around, and then he said, okay, Ahmed, are you well enough to ride your bike? Maybe an hour and a half? And Ahmed said, yeah, I can ride, I can still ride. And so Abuna said, I've got an address, and you can go to this address. And when you go there, I want you to meet my friend. His name's Boutros. Mustafa was in his 20s when he became a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood was an organization that was a very radical Muslim. They really took the Quran seriously. And they were operating in lots of Middle Eastern countries, Egypt and Libya particularly. And Mustafa was a really strong Muslim. He took the Quran very, very seriously. And he wanted to live out every detail. He wanted to be the most faithful Muslim, the one that would easily enter into paradise. He wanted Sharia law in all countries. He campaigned in Libya because the government was too soft. They needed to have the Muslim law. And he was actually sent to other countries, other Middle Eastern countries, to speak on the benefits of Sharia law. And in fact, you know, he was involved in burning churches, vandalizing Christian businesses, the whole lot. He'd beat up Jewish people in the street. And he and his friends had done this under the good name of Islam. They felt that this was right. In fact, Mustafa even terrorized his own family. He'd said to his father, this woman you've married, she doesn't pray 5 times a day. She's not a good Muslim. If you were a good Muslim, you would divorce her because she is worthless. She doesn't even take it seriously. And his father was so angry and his mother was so scared of him that they actually asked him to leave the house. He was too radical. He was too extreme. Mustafa was also very well educated, and he was given an assignment by a university professor. They wanted to create a document which showed all the distortions and the errors and the disgraceful sort of beliefs of Christianity. And they wanted to make sure to distribute this because they knew that Christian missionaries and so on came in and out of the Middle East, and they wanted to make sure people were very aware of how distorted Christianity was. And so his assignment was that he was to write this document. And the university professor gave him all these different critiques and all these articles written by various professors which outlined all the problems with Christianity. And so he had them and he was familiar with these. But then he thought, if I really want to understand this, I need to read the Bible. And so he read the first 5 books and he read it very, very carefully with a lot of detail and attention. And then he read the Gospels, because he needed to understand about this prophet Jesus, who was so central to the Christian faith. But then, as he read, as he looked at the critiques, he realized a lot of those things that had been written about Christianity were actually not real. Verses were quoted that weren't even in the Bible. There were things written that, they totally misquoted the Bible. And then the more he looked and saw it, the more he started to doubt the Quran. It wasn't the Bible anymore that he was worried about. It was the Quran. And the more he examined, the more he saw that the Christian God was nothing like Allah, the God, the Muslim word for God. And Jesus, the prophet, was nothing at all like Muhammad. This was so disturbing for him because he had built his whole life on the foundation that Islam was the right way and the truth. And it was so disturbing that on one night he he got his prayer mat out and he prayed in the good Muslim tradition. But he said, Allah, you have to reveal this to me. Which book is right, which book is wrong? Oops. Boutros had also been meeting with local pastors in the capital, Tripoli. There were very, very few Protestant or non-Catholic kind of churches in Libya. And Pastor Yusuf had a small gathering there, and actually Yusuf did a lot in Libya, and he would he really had an idea of what Boutros could be doing and where the needs were and so on. And so Yusuf and Boutros, they worked together, and Boutros found Yusuf very, very helpful. He was able to get a lot of information from him and know which communities needed his help the most. One day they were sat together at the back of the church in office, and Boutros was talking to him about the things that he wanted to do here in Libya. And they had a lot of ideas. But as they were talking, there was a knock on the door, and a man walked in full Muslim dress, with a big dark beard, and they greeted each other, and instantly Boutros and Yusuf were on guard. What was happening? Who was this? Is this an informant? What's happening? But the man said, "Please, can I sit down?" And of course, Yusuf said, "Please take a seat." And the man said, "Well, thank you, because this is the sixth church I've been to, and nobody has let me sit down. No one will hear me, and all I want to know, I just want to understand what you believe." Boutros was still on guard. But Yusuf said, "Okay, you can ask any question and I will do my best to answer you." And so the man said, well, I want to know is, how can you Christians say that God has a son? That is disgusting. That would mean that God is married. That's a terrible thought. And then what about this idea of you worshipping three gods? You say you only worship one God, and then you talk about the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. That's three gods in my book. And then you also say that Jesus became a man. That's disgraceful. That's dirty. That's the idea that Jesus would be a man. How can you do that? And yet the Son of God? That is beyond belief. Well, Yusuf was well prepared for these answers. And he was able, because he also knew the Quran very well, and he was able to answer each question very clearly and with examples from the Quran as well. And the man sat back and he was satisfied with these answers. And he told them that his name was Mustafa. And he told his story and he said, "I prayed, you see, and I asked Allah, I said, which book is right and which book is wrong? And that night, I saw a vision. I saw a man in shining white. And he said to me, 'I am the one you are searching for. Get up and read of me in the holy book.' And I knew it was Jesus. And I knew that he had come and he'd answered my question. It's the Bible, that's the truth. I know it." And so Yusuf saw this problem. Here was this man, a high up member of the Muslim Brotherhood, who had discovered that Christianity was the way. And he said a little bit more, he said, "Look, the Sheikh has noticed that I'm less involved. They've already seen that I'm pulling back. They've noticed a change in me already. They've accused me of being an infidel, and now I'm not a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. They've cut me off. I need to learn more, but I have nowhere to go." And so Yusuf and Boutros looked at each other, and then Boutros said, "I wonder if our friend Ahmed would like a flatmate." Now, Ahmed had come to Tripoli, and this is because Boutros, when Ahmed had turned up in the middle of the night, he didn't know what to do. There was this young man, of course, he stayed there for a while, but then, of course, Boutros rang his friend Yusuf and said, "What do I do? I'm fairly new here. Do you have some contacts?" And Yusuf had some people who knew someone, and they rented a little flat in the middle of the capital city. There, they knew that Ahmed would be safe. It'd be very, very hard to track him down because his town was very far away and his family would find it hard. And you were anonymous in a big city. And so they found this flat and Ahmed was now living there. And he had, he had a lot of quiet time alone. He of course couldn't go back to university. And so he had all this time to study the New Testament. And as he really studied and read, he was so touched by the life of the Lord Jesus. And he just was so angry that he hadn't seen this before. He felt that he'd been brainwashed. And he really felt that his Muslim friends needed to hear this. And they too had been brainwashed, just like him. And they too needed to understand really what Christianity was about. And not only that, but to meet Jesus. And so he decided that he would meet up with his old school friend, who was now at uni in Tripoli. And he met up with this this young man, Hassan. And Hassan was there in the uni cafeteria kind of thing. And he said, the first thing he said was, "Hey, what happened to you, Ahmed? Look, you're not wearing the normal Muslim dress." And Ahmed was like, "Shh, keep your voice down." And so the two of them talked, and Ahmed said, "I've become a Christian." And Hassan was like, "What? You believe in three gods now?" And Ahmed was like, no, keep your voice down." And together they talked for a while. And it ended up with Hassan saying, "All right, you get me a New Testament and I'll read it." And Ahmed had one right there and said, "You go read that now." It was dangerous, but Hassan was willing. When a few weeks later, when they met up again, Hassan came back and he said, This Jesus, I feel him walking before me. You know, he's touched my soul." But Ahmed knew that to become a Christian was a huge step. And so he said, "No hasty decisions." He said, "Ramadan's coming up in a few days, so I want you to pray and fast, but this time pray to Jesus and ask him to reveal himself to you. Take a month, make your decision carefully. You know how much it's going to cost." Well, during that time, during Ramadan, Hassan did. He really read the scripture and he really thought very hard and long about his decision. But as he was reading, on one day, his sister had her little baby, who was only a few months old, was really, really quite sick. And they took the baby to the hospital. And the doctors said that she had a significant heart problem and a breathing problem and so on. And the family were devastated. They stayed there and they tried, and the hospital did a whole lot of different tests and gave a lot of different treatment. And then the doctors said to the sister, Hassan's sister, just take the baby home. We can't really do much more for her. It's better that she dies at home." Well, the family was absolutely distraught. The idea that their beautiful little baby was going to depart from them so soon. But Hassan had just been reading about Jesus healing people. And so he decided that if Jesus was a healer, and if Jesus was alive today, then he would just ask Jesus to heal the baby. And so he walked over to the cot and put his hand on the little baby and said, "Jesus, you're a healer, so heal my niece." And just at that moment, the baby opened her eyes. And then she fell asleep. Well, when Hassan's sister came in and saw this, she wept and cried and said, "This is the end. She's going to die. Look, you know, this is the peace before sleep, before death." But then the baby woke up the next morning and was the same bubbly, chirpy, babbling little daughter. And they took her back to the doctors and they did all these tests. And the doctors said, "We don't really understand, but her heart is fine. She's completely healed." And Hassan ran to Ahmed and told him and said, "I am turning my back on Islam because this Jesus is living and real." As the months went past, Boutros was very concerned about these three young converts. You see, it was certainly they were growing, but it was so hard for them. They were away from their families, completely isolated, in a city where they really had to be careful who they made friends with. They were not able to go back to their normal jobs and uni and study. It was very difficult and isolating for them. And the other problem was, it wasn't like they could just join a local church either. And, you know, Boutros was really frustrated with this. But Pastor Yusuf and Abuna Alexander explained it to him. Because he used to say, what church doesn't want new converts? This is crazy. But the two men said, you don't really understand. You see, these are Muslim background believers. And there is a lot of suspicion between Christians and Muslims because of all the persecution. There have been people, Muslims, who claim that they are converted to Christianity and they come into the churches and actually they're secret informants. And they come and then they wreak havoc and destroy Christian businesses and ruin families. And the churches are suspicious, and sometimes rightly so. And then he said, even if they know that these converts are absolutely genuine, well, if the police make a raid on the church and they find out that there is one person in the congregation who was a Muslim and converted to Christianity, then the whole church has to be shut down. The pastor is arrested. People who know or have helped that person are arrested. And that person themselves, well, if they're arrested, they're lucky. They're more likely to be killed. So, you know, Boutros had a lot to learn. But the reality of the situation was that these three converts who genuinely had come to faith were not able to join a church. And so, you know, it was really hard. Boutros really felt for them. And it was around this time that Brother Andrew came and visited all the way from Holland. And they sat together and talked to each other. And Boutros explained the difficulty of this situation and said, you know, I'm doing all of this and then there's these three converts on the side. And Andrew said, don't think like this. You know, maybe you've been sent to Libya for those three to disciple, maybe, yes, the pastors and the Christian leaders, but maybe it's also for these Muslim background believers. These two need our help. And maybe you are here to disciple them. So then they, in turn, can disciple others who will come after them. Well, Andrew really encouraged Boutros, and when he dropped him at the airport, you know, Andrew said, if you ever need anything, you let me know, because I can come. I'll come back, and I'll visit you and do anything I can. 1 week later, there was a knock on the door of Boutros' flat. And two men were standing there. They didn't introduce themselves. They barged straight into the flat. And they started looking around. And instantly Boutros knew who they were. They were the Libyan secret police. "What are you doing in this country?" said one of them. "What do you mean?" said Boutros. "I'm a citizen here. This is my country." The other one said, "Well, what is your work?" Boutros said, "Well, I work in churches. I support the pastors to be effective in their work amongst the Christians." "And you probably already know that." The other one said, "Who was the foreigner from Europe who visited you last week?" And suddenly Boutros realized how closely he'd been watched. They probably knew everything. And then they asked, "Have you converted or baptized any Muslims?" And Boutros could say, honestly, no, he hadn't. But just before the two men walked out the door, one of them turned around and said to him, very close up to his face, "If you really love your wife and your little son, then you'll leave this country while you can." And with that threat, you know, Boutros realized that things were going to get a lot more difficult. But he knew that God had sent him here. He had a work to do. And that work was just beginning. And so he trusted the Lord that had sent him. Now, it was very difficult for the young converts, Ahmed, Hassan, and Mustafa. They had so much to learn. So much. And Boutros after speaking to Andrew, decided that he would take it on himself to go and meet with them regularly and disciple them and build them up and teach them. They had a lot to learn about little details. You know, they'd never given thanks before a meal, for example. They didn't really know how to pray. The Muslim faith was so disciplined and very much external. And so they had to understand the differences. They needed to even learn about how to treat women. You see, they used to be shocked when Boutros would turn to his wife Nadira and ask for her opinion. They thought that was weird. And then they thought it was very strange because Boutros sometimes picked up a dish from the table and took it to the kitchen. That was woman's work. And he had to teach them about how the Lord viewed marriage and what Paul wrote about marriage and women. And all of this was new to them because they were so immersed in their culture. But beyond that, he really taught them the scripture and encouraged them to memorize Philippians, the whole book. But beyond those teaching things, he also wanted them to work. And through Bible Forum had sent him a whole lot of material, Arabic material, to be given to the churches. Because there was nowhere in Libya for people to buy Christian books and Bible studies and things, and the pastors had no resources at all. And so he set up this little shop in Tripoli which could sell these or to hand out different things to the Christian community. But beyond that, they also had a printing place where they could have printing and all that sort of stuff. And these three men started to get involved in that work. There was a knock on the door of Boutros' flat one evening. And Boutros actually wasn't home. But Nadira was home, and she opened the door. And there was a young girl there in a hijab who had red eyes and a swollen face. Nadira guessed maybe what had happened and pulled the young girl inside. And as she came inside and Nadira shut the door, the girl fell to the floor and just cried and cried and cried. And so after a little while, Nadira sort of settled her, and then Salima told her story. Salima was from a very, very wealthy family. Her father was a big businessman in Libya. And she was into her clothes and jewelry and shopping and all of that kind of stuff, as any teenager was. And one day she was surfing through the many channels on her TV. She had a TV in her room, and they had satellite. And so they had hundreds of different channels. And she came across, by chance, there was this channel where there was a guy who was preaching. And at first she was really amused by his strange Arabic accent. But then she started to tune into what he was saying. And she was so drawn in to the preaching that when the banner at the bottom came up to say, if you want to know more, contact this and we'll send you, blah, 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 she copied it all down and she rang the number and she ordered this Bible study pack and a New Testament. And so when it arrived, and she'd managed to get it all very secretly, she'd started going through it. And she started reading in the New Testament and looking at these different commentaries that sort of taught about it. And as she read, you know, she was so shocked. This prophet Jesus, this prophet loved everyone, even women. And she was so engrossed in this. One day, as she was reading, one of her friends called her and said, hey, we're going to go to the shops, the mall. We're going to go, come now, come and join us. And her brother offered to give her a lift. And so she jumped up and did her makeup and got her hijab on and everything. And she didn't pack away her New Testament or her Bible study materials. She spent a lovely day at the shops. Even though they all had to wear the strict Muslim dress in public, all the girls used to wear designer clothes underneath, and they loved their shopping. And she was wealthy. She had a lot of money to spend. When she returned home, her mother was in her room. And when she came into her room, her mother just held up the New Testament and all the Bible study materials. And that's when all hell broke loose for Salima. Her father and her brother found out, and they completely went through her room. They threw all her books out. They took the Bible. They burnt the Bible and all the Bible study materials. They took her TV out. They confiscated her phone. They went through everything. And she pleaded with them. She said, "What are you doing? I'm not even a Christian. What are you? Why this reaction? Doesn't the Quran mention Jesus? I'm just finding out more." But they were so angry. And her brother said, "You know, it would be my honor to kill you right now." And they beat her, they kicked her, and they locked her in that bedroom. She was so close to thinking, "This is ridiculous. I'm giving in. What sort of reaction is that?" And she was about to give in when suddenly she looked and there was a man in shining white standing in her bedroom. And he said, "Why are you worried? You are not alone. Be strong in your faith." And somehow she knew that this person was the Lord Jesus. And in that moment, she realized that she had faith. She really did believe in this prophet, Jesus, who was the Son of God. And so she was very much strengthened by this. But every day her father came and screamed and lectured her and beat her. But every day she refused and she became stronger and more determined that she had found the truth. One day her father burst into her room and said, "You're getting married and you're getting married to this man." And she said, you know he's not a good man." And her father said, "You marry who I give you to marry." And then she said, no, because if you think I'm a Christian, then I can't marry a Muslim." And the father said, "You will become a Muslim through your marriage." And she said, "No, you can't make me." And the father said, "The invite's already sent. You're getting married no matter what." And she refused. And her father again beat her until she was on the ground and she couldn't even get up. She stayed on the ground for the whole day. And the next afternoon, she heard a voice that she recognized. And the voice said, "Get up now and leave this place." And she realized that she could get up. And she got a change of clothes and she got a small bag. And she realized she still had some money from that shopping trip. And she tried the door of her room and it was unlocked. And so she walked out. And then she realized that her busy house, because she had a big family with maids and everything, it was really quiet. And she walked down the stairs and out the front door. She caught a bus. She stayed in a hostel. Then she thought, "I don't know where to go." So she went to a church and she found a pastor and she asked the pastor where she should go. And the pastor had written down an address and said, "Go and talk to my friend Boutros." And so there she was at the house. Now when Nadira heard all of this, she said she was so joyful because she too had an idea when they'd come to Libya. Boutros wanted to encourage the Christians and build up the church in Libya, but she had a real desire for the women. You see, to be a woman in this country was so dangerous as it was. They were second-rate citizens. And yet, for a woman to become a Christian, it was really, really hard. Often they were married off, because if they were married to a Muslim, then they were seen as a Muslim. But often these marriages were not good marriages, and the women were often treated as prostitutes or slaves, because the husband knew that they were being married off because they were Christian. And so, you know, she understood that there were so many women trapped who had nowhere to run, no family, no education. And she wanted to create some place, some safe place for these women. But of course they knew that Salima, with such a wealthy family, that there was no way she could stay with Boutros and Nadira. And so when Boutros came home later that night, the two of them sat and thought, and they thought, well, where can she go? Where's somewhere that she will be helpful, but she will be also very much safe from her family, because they might come after her. And then Boutros said, "I know." And he got on the phone and he called Abuna Alexander. Many months later, Nadira and Boutros were enjoying a cup of tea together at the end of the day. It was like 11 p.m. And there was a soft knock on the door. And they looked at one another because they thought, what is this now? But Boutros went to the door and he opened it and there was a man standing outside. And the man stepped in and Boutros greeted him. And then when he came into the light, this man was wearing a tailored European suit. And when Boutros looked at him, he was shocked. This man was a very, very high government official in Libya. Now, of course, Boutros' first thought was, this is a trap. But then why on earth would they send the highest sheikh at the top of the Libyan government, why would they send this guy to his flat? They would surely send the secret police. So what was going on? And Nadira regained enough composure to go and make coffee, and she went. And this man, Karim, introduced himself and said, I hope to keep this meeting a complete secret. Boutros agreed. And Karim continued and said, I got this idea of this meeting from your holy book. I read about a man called Nicodemus who came to Jesus by night. And I thought to do the same. Because I think I have become what some people call a follower of Christ. Well, Boutros was so shocked. And then Karim said, of course you cannot mention this to anyone. You know my position. But I needed to come and tell someone. And I know that I need to learn more. I just wanted someone I could talk to about the Lord Jesus. And of course Boutros agreed. And Karim said, you must be ready to meet at very short notice at different locations. If you see me in public, of course, you are not to recognize me. Well, Boutros was very shaken by this, but he also realized that yes, a sheikh at the highest level of Libyan government, he too needed to be discipled. Hassan, Mustafa and Ahmed had been growing in the Lord. And one day they came to Boutros and said, the three of us, we've talked and we want to get baptized. And this was no small request because, of course, baptizing a Muslim was illegal. And if someone found out that this person who was a Muslim was baptized to become Christian, then their family would kill them, no investigation would happen, they could be arrested, any number of things could happen to these men. So for them to say that they wanted to be baptized was a huge step because they knew that it could cost them absolutely everything. But they knew that baptism was a command. They were commanded to do this, and so they were sure that they wanted to go through with it. Boutros didn't know what to do because, of course, for him to baptize was really not very possible. He was already being watched. And then he came up with an idea. He remembered what Brother Andrew had said earlier, if you ever need some help, give me a call. And so he called Brother Andrew and said, could you do me a favor? Would you be able to come over and would you be able to baptize 3 men for me? You see, Brother Andrew, as a citizen of the EU, he was all right. He was covered. It would be much safer for him. So, of course, Brother Andrew agreed, and he came over, and he was told to meet at a certain and particular spot at a certain time, and he did, and just at that time, a car came by, and he jumped into the car, and the driver took off and weaved through the traffic, and then did this huge U-turn and weaved through the traffic in the opposite direction, went in and out of alleyways, and Andrew was thinking, what is going on here? And then the man stopped and said, get out, grab your bags and get out, and get into the car in front. And then the car sped off, and Andrew ran to the other car, and he jumped in, and then there was Boutros sat in the driver's seat. And Boutros did a U-turn and sped off in the other direction, and said, sorry about that. Just that we might be being followed, and so we have to take precautions. Well, Andrew realized the danger of this situation from that, and it was very clear to them as well when they came to this old construction site that had been abandoned. And they'd found this site and they'd put black plastic in all the windows, and they had this children's inflatable pool in the middle there, and that was it. And the men arrived at all different times. And finally, that when they were all there, and there were more actually than those three, but as they sat there, Brother Andrew addressed them all, and he talked to them about the new creation. The old has passed away, and everything has been made new. And for them, they really understood this. And then they talked too about their faith and how they had come to know the Lord. And the solemnity of that time was such that it really struck Brother Andrew. He could see that these three men had counted the cost. They knew the path they were taking. So the three of them went to be baptized. To anyone else, it would have looked really silly, you know, a children's inflatable pool and less than a meter of water. But for these three men, it was holy ground, because this was a huge step for them. They were turning their back on Islam, and everything they had known in their early years is all gone, because they were going to be a follower of Christ. And when Ahmed was baptized, he went to Brother Andrew and he said, "You know, my name, it's a very Muslim name. Can you give me a Christian name?" And Brother Andrew had been warned by Boutros that Ahmed wanted this. And he had already prepared something, and he said, "Yes, I want you to, your new name is Timothy. And this is your verse that I want you to keep with you. I've fought the good fight. I've finished the race. I've kept the faith." Now, it was an extremely joyful occasion. But they all had to leave in secret, bit by bit, dribs and drabs. And Nadira had to gather all the wet clothes, because these men couldn't be seen with those wet clothes. That would really give it away. And she gathered everything up, and once the whole place had been cleared out, they finally left. And Andrew went back to Boutros' flat, and the three of them sat around the table and enjoyed a supper together. It had this incident had a huge impact on Brother Andrew, because he saw firsthand the faith and determination of these men and the true conversion that had happened in their life. They really had made a U-turn. And as they were talking, the phone rang and interrupted their conversation. Boutros went to the office and answered it, and Nadira continued to clean up the supper plates. But when Boutros returned, his face was white. What is it, my love?" Nadira said. And Boutros' voice shook. "It's Ahmed, Hassan and Mustafa. They've all been arrested." And that's where we'll stop today.